Man of business. Lift the brick. And brick can't qualify what good they've done us.
My son wanted that. My son was hard.
Well, that'd be better than all my sons, because I was like, stupid, so you're happy.
It's like my kid became a teen and one of them, they snuck out of the house at midnight.
I've got two more.
Good, how's he doing?
School, got suspended from school.
I didn't look at those.
Sorry.
Budget.
We can start that going around and get signatures.
Can we sign it before we vote?
Well, if you don't vote, we can rip it off.
Okay.
I don't think there's a problem with it. So Tim signs on here, but then each of you have to sign here.
Is that being all done in a specific order?
Not that, not, yeah, I would think that you should be first, but I don't think there's any requirement. Maybe the treasurer.
Let's just sign them, we'll just pass them and do all three at once.
Oh, yeah, I like Tim. He's a really good guy. I haven't seen him in years.
Scary Phil. Okay. Does this have to be just a quorum or every board member?
Every board member.
So we can't turn it in until the rest of the car comes back?
That's correct.
Okay, so we have time. All right.
Yeah, Carl will be back on Friday.
How's Hollywood doing? All dressed up with their summer shirts on already. I would rather a slower rate of increase than 71 day and 80 the next.
Carthen said it hit 86 this afternoon.
It is warmer than that down here on the ramp. My feet would get hot.
This is the budget thing.
Yeah, this is the thing that we have to submit to the state.
You're rich. You signed your name already. You just don't know it.
Giving away autographs for free. And you're so famous that you should be able to sell these for, a quarter of a piece?
You're the officer. I mean, there's a new school
that we're at the board. That's why I disagree with that.
He's still at the board.
He's trying to get back.
Oops.
Commissioner, I saw that dirty
pass goes over to Tim to sign. That's the Tim to sign to his spot.
Especially not here at Carps.
You want to sign these?
I don't think
in your spot?
No, but.
Okay, I got 6 o'clock.
The games begin.
I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority for Thursday, May 15th, 2014 at 6 p.m. to order. The meeting's being held in the Carson City Airport Terminal Building. Roll call, please.
Chairperson Williams?
Present.
Vice Chair Hutter? Member Griffin? Member Posick?
Here.
Member Shirk?
Here.
Member Stotts?
Here.
Member White?
Here.
The quorum is present.
Would you all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Okay, approval of the minutes of past meetings. I believe we have the April meeting for approval. Are there any corrections or comments from board members?
None for me.
Nope.
Seeing none, we stand in need of a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
A motion has been made and seconded to approve the minutes of the April meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, the motion carries unanimously. Modification of the agenda. The chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. I see no reason to modify the agenda this evening. Public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on agendized and non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for a future Airport Authority meeting. Do any members of the public wish to speak at this time? Seeing none. Consent agenda. We have nothing on consent for the evening. We'll move to public hearings. First item on public hearings, discussion and action to approve the Carson City Airport Authority tentative budget as the final budget for fiscal year 2014 to 2015, authorization to certify and transmit same to the Department of Taxation and the Nevada Tax Commission, authorization for staff to make the required filings. Mr. Cohen, Mr. Bossett, Ms. Cohen, Mr. Bossett, and Mr. Rowe. I believe we have the tentative agenda, which we reviewed last week, and we have a final version with modifications last week. Beth, would you care to?
Sure, I'll just summarize. These numbers reflect the each detailed line summarized that based on the last meeting, exactly as you approved. It reflects total revenue of approximately $1,691,000 and total expenses of $1,681,000, and then an ending fund balance is slightly different because once it flowed through, it was slightly different, but the actual revenue expenses are exactly as you approved. So your ending fund balance is approximately $122,000.
And where does that put us on the percentage for
about 7%.
7%?
Of eight with capital expenditures and 21% without your capital outlay. So.
Okay. Any comments from board members on this item?
I have none. No comment.
None for myself. Mr. Shirk?
Yes, sir.
Morris? Yep. Okay. Members of the public who wish to comment on the budget? Seeing no comments from the public, back to the board. Any further comments? We stand in need of a motion.
I'll make a motion. I think this is the way we should read it. As I move, we make the changes to the tentative budget reflected in the proposed final budget and adopt it as our final budget.
I will second the motion.
All those, we have a motion that's been made and seconded. Any further comment on the motion? If not, members of the public, wishing to comment on the motion? Seeing none, we need a vote. All those in favor of the motion as presented by Mr. Posick, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, the motion carries unanimously. Please pass the documents to...
Easier this week.
Tim has them. Does Beth take those or do we? Do you take those or do we?
Do you have another copy? I have copies of this.
You have copies of everything?
You just keep one original for yourself and send
two. We still have to have everybody sign it all. Pardon? Should we keep those together so we have them all signed?
Yeah, no, I'll keep them together.
Yeah. Okay. That's the other thing I just want to mention is earlier I told you or mistakenly told you that everybody has to sign on the Airport Authority. I don't know where I got that information from. The statute says majority, and so I highlighted that in my briefing memo to you. So if the five of you sign it, that's good enough. So
Okay.
I'll get it tomorrow. I'll get it to her tomorrow.
If it's approved, then you guys will want to.
Right. Yeah. I'll deliver it tomorrow.
Okay.
Well, it's even better.
Item number two, discussion and possible action regarding adoption of a resolution to accept bids on lease parcel 202 or part thereof per NRS 244.283 for airport land lease as follows. One, examination of appraisal of 0.36 cents per square foot per year. Two, determination of whether to issue an invitation to bid and description of property being made available. Three, determination of appropriate minimum lease rate and terms of the lease and permitted uses. And four, set deadlines for bids and the date for the bid opening and consideration. Five, discussion on reimbursement of appraisal and authorization for airport staff to publish as requested by NRS 244.283. Mr. Tavis.
So, this item.
If I could have a moment, please.
Yeah, sure.
The last time this item was in front of this board, I voiced some pretty strong opinions. I feel like the way I presented myself was somewhat disrespectful to this board and to the public. And for that, I would like to apologize. And also, I don't feel like I gave Mr. Norbert the respect that he is due. And I'd like to apologize for that also.
So noted.
So this item was carried over from last meeting, or I guess it was last month. To make land available at the airport, the statutory process is you adopt a resolution which identifies the terms under which you're offering it. It needs to be based on an appraisal, and you identify a period of time under which people can submit sealed bids, a date in which you would open and consider those bids, and then you award a lease. That's the general process. When we last met, you guys had a lot of questions for the folks from Cactus Air Force as to how much space do they really need, what do they have planned out there, and I think it might have even been at the meeting before that Morris White had said, you know, we really have to think about this kind of a little bit more globally, too. This is the front of the airport. Let's factor that into the consideration. And so... I guess there isn't anybody here from Cactus tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. So this is a good time for you to ask. That's perfect, because this is a good time for you to ask those questions of Cactus and figure out what it is they want to do, and then you decide what you want to make available and what those terms are. We do have an appraisal, and there's the appraiser is here who can answer questions. In a nutshell, that's kind of the process. There is one thing that is somewhat critical, and that is the appraisal can't be more than 6 months old when you put it out to bid. And so there is a time factor running here, because we did spend about, I think it was $3,500 on the appraisal with the idea that we would have it reimbursed by whoever the successful bidder was. But if we don't get a bid, or we don't get this process going within 6 months, then we may have wasted that $3,000.
What was the date on the appraisal?
I don't have it with
it's on
me.
The appraisal.
March 21st.
Yeah. But maybe with that, maybe we can have Cactus get up here, and you can ask your questions, and maybe they can outline what it is they anticipate doing, and that would help you refine this so you can make a decision as to how much of it you want to make available and those conditions. Now, I should preface it with, I set it up, and I had explained this much earlier, I set it up so that if Cactus wanted to bid on it and they were the lucky bidder, it could be utilized both as an aviation museum and a full-service FBO. And part of the logic for that is, if you just put it out to lease as an aviation museum, and for whatever reason, the aviation museum, they build a building and, you know, they build the field and the crowd doesn't come, I think we would want to make sure that that facility continues to be utilized, and so we would want it to have it have its highest and best use. The other thing it does is it gets us out of the trap that we've been caught in before, where if we limit what you can do on a lease, it's extremely difficult for us to change that later to enlarge it. And so I structured the model lease, which are the terms, along those lines, but I'm throwing that out to you because that was just my idea of the way to go. This isn't about what I think, it's what you guys decide.
One other question. Yeah. Are we in any way limited to keeping that aviation related?
I'm sorry,
are we required to keep this land use here as aviation related? For example,
suppose
some Maverick gas station decides they want to put a facility out there in front of the airport.
You could put a non-aviation related business there. I mean, we looked at that carefully before because we were thinking it would be really nice to attract like an Outback Steakhouse or something else that would be somewhat of a magnet to the airport. And so we checked the zoning at that time, and yeah, you can do that. In addition, when we had tried this once before, where we just put it out to bid and said, people bring us your ideas, one of the ideas that was brought to us was Johnny Barbero was putting in kind of a little office and shopping complex, which was not aviation related. Their proposal failed for other reasons, but it wasn't because of the proposed usage. So the short answer to your question is no, it's not limited to aviation.
I have a question for you. If we get a number of bids and none of them meet the 36 cents a square foot, can we accept it?
No, you cannot.
Okay.
I mean, you know, and I'm glad you asked that question because that question has been asked by several people. And so I went back to look to see if we have any flexibility. And it's pretty clear that it has to be based on a price set by an appraisal not less than 6 months old. And the language makes it pretty clear to me that you can't go below your appraised value. There are some instances where we can go under appraised value. This isn't one of them. So with that, maybe put you in the hot seat over here next to me. I won't bite. And so,
no problem. Thank you. My name is Mike DeLona, one of the directors for Cactus Air Force. And I'm here today. First, I'd see if I can get a clarification on the actual date
that we're talking about. Is that the sign sheet there?
If you want me to sign,
just put your
sign
name in there. That would be good.
March 21?
Yeah. Done. Just a clarification for after reading Mr. Norberg's appraisal. What is the actual date again? It said as of March 5th versus prepared.
No, it's the prepared date. That's the date at which the appraisal was issued to us. Okay. So that's the date that's
March 21 is it for 6 months.
Yeah.
But I'm here today to represent Mr. Clemens, Rick Clemens, and it's been his decision to, because the appraisal was done, that he'd like to go ahead and pay for that appraisal. And so he's made a check out to the airport authority to cover the costs of that. And I think for any other further discussion on it, I'd like to be able to table that for the next meeting so we can go have further questions or discussion about the use of the property, whether or not we're going to bid on it or not. So I'd like to present that to the board. And I don't know who accepts that. Tim?
Very generous. Very generous gesture.
Please express our our appreciation to Mr. Clemens for absorbing that expense for us.
You bet. He's happy to do so. So, with that's what I'm here for today.
Okay.
And if you have any other questions, I'm going to be glad to answer them.
Well, I don't know. You said you have wanted to leave some of it till a future meeting, but you have at this point no idea. One of the questions for us was, were we going to be leasing that as one chunk or as divided chunks, or you know, do you want like part of it, all of it, none of it?
Well, I think,
and I know you don't know the specific answer.
Right, the specific answer.
Deliberations.
I know that the appraisal value was somewhat of a shock, simply because of the historic value of it. But I think that if we could table it until the next meeting, I'd probably be better served if we discuss it. Discuss it further.
Yeah, I mean, if you have any other questions, you can pop them out. That way, you can take them home with you.
Sure, and, exactly.
If you know the answers now, great. But if you don't, because I know there were a lot of questions at the last meeting.
Well, the size of the parcel that you wanted to lease was one, and uses that you saw for either a museum and or above and beyond use as a museum, so that we had a pretty good idea of what it was we were going to be structuring the opportunities for. As Mr. Takis just mentioned, we have other things that we should build into our lease terms so that we wouldn't preclude others from bidding on it. I don't know, does anyone else have questions? I don't want to... Yes, go ahead.
I have one question that I have is, if you take this parcel, whether the entire thing or a smaller piece, how are we going to provide pedestrian and civilian access to this piece of property to get to your piece? Because, you know, we talked about giving you that very back, far west end of the whole thing. Well, how do we get people in and out of there without having them go through the regular part of the airport if they're coming to your museum?
I think that's another question that I'll take back with
okay.
me.
And related to that, I think you brought it up last time too, Morris. You asked about the parking. And so we need to figure out the parking utilization.
Yeah, I think something, it is going to be a museum and or an FBO, what kind of parking requirements are you going to have? Because we have parking requirements for the airport. If we give you some of that, we need to kind of figure out. Again, these are just questions for our planning of utilization of that property.
Correct. Okay. I understand that.
Okay. Steve, any other questions or thoughts?
No, I don't know if he has this map showing the breakdown of this, and I was going to give you one.
I think it's on the appraisal, isn't it?
I don't know if it's the same as the one Atkins has done.
Oh, okay.
We had our engineers superimpose the area.
So if you guys want these drawings, the different format, there's a PDF, we can provide that for you.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. If you do want something, just contact Tim and ask him for it, and we'll provide it.
Okay.
Yeah, I have just a couple of questions about the nature of the museum itself. It may be premature to be asking these, but this is called Wings and Wheels Museum, so I presume there'll be some vehicles in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
How many airplanes do you think you'll be able to get into that space?
Well, once again, that's something we'd have to take a look at on the ultimate footprint that's decided for the structure itself. So I don't have a number for you, but...
I've going around the airport, I noticed a number of very interesting-looking aircraft tucked here and there in the various hangars. Is it your plan to rotate displays in and out of there?
I think so. There'd be a limited number of rotations, but not very infrequent, I think, at the same time. Once again, I don't know the number. We'd have to take a look at the footprint and see what it's determined to have.
So you would be keeping some aircraft in other hangars and or on ramps?
Well, we have flying aircraft, and those would be in the hangars. And the museum would primarily be for static aircraft, so they wouldn't be flyers. And so that the number of those would be determined on the square footage we have available to put airplanes in there, in aircraft.
Yeah. If the museum goes bust, and that means you'll be able to use it as an FBO. Do you have the use of it as an FBO?
Well, I think the established property is going to be structured as either.
Well, that's the way I proposed it. And my thinking is, if it doesn't work as a museum,
we want that parcel to have its highest and best use, which would probably be an FBO.
Yeah.
And also we wouldn't have to go back and say, okay, the lease was restricted to being a museum, now we can't be a museum. What? How do we change the lease? And historically, we've had a real problem changing uses on a lease. So we've kind of learned that the better way to err is make the lease capable of doing everything that you could, you know, think would be useful on that parcel, and then, you know, leave it that way.
So if the museum thing didn't work out, would you be interested in keeping the FBO, keeping the whole lease, but just changing it over to an FBO? Or would you sublet it to somebody else that would be interested?
I can't speak for Mr. Clements on that.
I'll take that question there.
That's a good one to take back. And candidly, I just kind of assume that if it didn't work as that, they would probably sell or assign it to somebody else who wanted to run an FBO. And that might actually be, you know, one of the existing FBOs on the field, or it could be somebody new to the field. You know, it dawns on me that, you know, Steve, you asked a question earlier about can we ever go below the appraisal? The process that we started here, the answer is no. But if you recall, when we first started this process, we were talking about the Cactus Air Force Museum as being a nonprofit. And if they're a nonprofit, there is that exception for nonprofit entities that have the 501c3 status. There are a couple other requirements, but...
So does that exempt them from paying at all?
Well, no. What it does is it allows you to lease an area to a nonprofit on any terms you see fit, and you're not restricted by any appraisal. In fact, you're not even required to get an appraisal. And so when we first started talking about this concept, we were talking about putting it down on the east end of the airport on property that we acquired through the Recreational and Public Purposes Act of the federal law that says we pretty much have to use it only for nonprofits. And so it seemed like it was a perfect fit. But my understanding is when Cactus looked at it, there were some access issues and there was some size issues. And at the time, I think they said, nah, we need something that's more like the parcel that's out here behind El Arrero. And so, and I don't know what the status is. You know, last time I checked, you guys still didn't have the nonprofit badge.
We do now.
You do now, okay. Well, that's huge. I mean, that's a big change. I mean, it gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of leasing. And it does not restrict you to the appraised value. You know, the appraised value is still a nice yardstick for you to know this is what the market value is, but you're not restricted by it.
But if it ceased to be a museum...
Well, when it changes from a nonprofit entity to a profit entity, yeah, then...
So the fact that if we were doing it as a museum and an FBO, the only components that would be subject to less than the appraised value would be those that were specifically the museum, but any other activity that were to occur there would have to be occurring at the, you know, the appraised lease rate.
Yeah, and what we might have to do, and I'm kind of thinking out loud here, which is really dangerous because I've only had a few hours of sleep in the last 48 hours, but what we might have to do is structure a lease that says we're leasing it for both of these purposes so long as it's, you know, if it's all used as a museum, it's at this very low rate. If it changes and starts being used as an FBO, then if it's all being used as an FBO, it all jumps to a higher rate. If it's proportionally used somehow, maybe we figure out a proportional way to do it so that if the museum didn't work and they wanted to sell and assign it to someone who's strictly an FBO, whether that's a Signature Air or a Carson Aviation or whoever it is, then it would jump to whatever that appraised value was that we had used when we had first leased it out.
I understand that. And so what we would probably do initially is identify the square footage.
Yeah, I think the best thing is identify...
This is museum, this is FBO.
Yeah. If you're going to use the both uses. I mean, I think ideally you want to look at it and say, okay, what do we really want for a museum here? And if you're going to use it all as a museum, these guys have a lot of flexibility in setting a base rent rate. If you're going to use part of it as an FBO, recognize that that FBO section
sure.
is going to be dictated by the appraisal rate. And then, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, the way the statute's set up is we're putting this thing out to bid and making, you know, free access for anybody who wants to come and bid on it. But candidly, it was Cactus Air Force who came to us and said, we think we'd like to have some space out there, and we are the reason why you should put it out to bid. So you may end up with enough information from them that when you get it out there and put it out to bid, they might be the only likely bidder. Now, there's nothing illegal or wrong about it, but it might seem odd to you because the statute kind of envisions, okay, I got a piece of land here. Here are the dimensions. Here are the terms I'm going to offer it on. Give me the best price. And frequently you get lots of bidders on it. And we're using the same statute that the city is subject to and, frankly, every other subdivision of the state of Nevada is subject to it, too. It's Chapter 244 pretty much... 244 and its parallel section, which applies to cities, pretty much applies to cities and counties across the board. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because part of what your ability under the statute is to customize the uses that you want to see. And so if you can figure out what that use is in advance and build that into your specs, you're going to get something that looks more like what you think is best fits the airport.
I have one more question for you and Mr. Clay.
Sure.
If they decide to build a hangar, mm-hmm. height restrictions, and the reason I'm asking this is because of those antennas that we've already leased out, if they decided to put their hangar on the west end of this property, is it going to block any of that stuff?
That's something we probably have to look at. I don't know how.
I don't want them to come up with a 40-foot hangar and find out they can't do it.
Yeah. I think we have to look at the height. It would probably be dictated by the height of the lowest antennas on that tower.
Which is not very much higher than the El Aero building.
Okay. Well, the El Aero building's a pretty tall building.
Well, we're looking at an angle, too.
So yeah, we're looking at an angle. But we can pull that because the airport leases actually specify where on the beacon tower each of those antennas are permitted to be. And we would look at that. But that's a good observation. We don't want to screw up the leases that we have out there. I mean, I wouldn't want to go down the path of having someone say, hey, you leased me this space to use as an antenna, and now you've denied me. You have to build me another antenna tower someplace so that I get at least what I had before. Mm-hmm. And I think the bottom person on the lease is Verizon, and they're kind of litigious people.
Well, I just know the way the prevailing wind blows around here, and the door would have to be on this side.
Yeah, the other thing, too, about that location is I think we would want to keep at least some buffer between those antennas and your facility anyway, because we keep running into requests from antenna companies. Well, most recently, I think we had a legitimate request. We get a lot of bizarre requests, but we get some legitimate requests where they're changing out their antenna equipment, and that requires them to have more ground equipment. And, you know, if they need to lease some additional ground space to go with their antenna, we want to make sure we've got a little bit there to lease to them. So we might want to create a little bit of a buffer there anyway, but, that's a good idea about its impact on the antenna.
There's no impact on aircraft operations, obviously, because we could be as high as the beacon itself.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I understand that.
But you're
because of the antennas.
Yeah.
Most of them are FM, so they're line of sight. So the lower they are.
Yeah, and those antennas, by the way, are a great revenue source for the airport. So we don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot either. Yeah. Other questions? No.
Yeah. I think the idea of the museum out there is great. I'm looking forward to getting a closer look at all that aircraft and so forth. And I have a feeling that the airport itself is going to benefit more from the museum than Mr. Clemens will. Doesn't seem like a very good way to make a profit. I hope it does. I hope he does. But I'm wondering, this is just one request you might take to them. Please put a little coffee shop in there. That'll make it more attractive.
Now, would that be on the square footage for the higher rent, or would that be?
I think we could do the lower rent for that. But,
I think put a bar in.
Yeah. Now, if you put a bar in, I don't know, that might be a little different. But
well, that definitely kind of
this building, one of the bars.
Yeah.
We're
still working on the second floor here in 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, and it is frontage on College Parkway, so I mean, that you. It may have, that may give it certain values, or that may direct how you want to use different pieces of it, too.
Yeah, that almost seems like that would be a natural thing to do.
Well, it would be, because people will fly in here to see the museum, and naturally the fuel sales will go up, but they would also be more motivated to fly in here if they get a cup of coffee and a hamburger or something like that, and see the museum. It would be a nice amenity.
Yeah, I'll take that back.
Now, if you could get an Outback Steakhouse in there, that would even...
Yeah, that would be great. Then we got a place to go for lunch.
And a place to drink.
Yeah.
That's right. Well,
hey, we'll just move Outback
it is,
yeah.
Let's expand this airport.
Yeah, if they have a private room, we could hold our airport authority meetings in there.
Civil Air Patrol. They're practicing finding beacons. ELTs out there.
Are there any other questions for Cactus?
I don't think so,
but since we're going to need to move this to one more meeting, give Cactus a chance to come back with what they think they want to do with the square footage out there.
Yeah, I'll take the questions back and hopefully give you some.
We could put it out for lease now, but without knowing.
No, I think you should wait and try to get as much information as you can. I mean, if somebody else showed up and said, hey, I'd like to lease it too, and I got some ideas, you would certainly want to listen to those as well.
Right.
It's just that we haven't really had that interest.
Okay.
Great. Appreciate it. Unless you have any other questions.
I think that does it. Thank you for coming in and giving us the input. And we look forward to whatever you come back with.
When is the next meeting?
Third Wednesday of June.
Third Wednesday of June.
I had their phones out quicker than I could, so I didn't.
The 18th.
The 18th?
June
18th. And it would be at the community center.
In the center. I think Lee ought to be back by then. Griffin.
Yeah, Lee and Jim should be back by then.
Okay.
All right, well, I appreciate it taking your time. And we'll be back.
Any other comments from the board on this item in general? I guess that closes that one out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep, you bet.
We're on to the airport engineer's report. Mr. Clary.
Yep. Well,
could we wait, Mr. Norberg, just before you leave,
sure.
Would changing the amount of land that we lease change the value of the appraisal?
If it was material, if it was a big change. For the most part, like if you go from 2.5 acres down to an acre, I don't think it would be an issue. If you got down to like a half acre or something like a fast food site, I'd probably have to take another look at it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could indulge you for a moment, could I ask Mr. Norberg a few questions about the appraisal? On page 17, number 11, where you say, although the subject property is currently a portion of the Carson City Airport, for the purpose of valuation and the development of the market rent opinion, it is assumed to be an independent parcel postured to be developed to its highest and best use. Is that to say that, in essence, in view of this appraisal, the airport really does not exist in relation to that piece of property?
No, I'm not saying the airport doesn't exist. I'm saying that I appraised it based on its highest and best use if it was in the private sector without any furnished instructions as to any additional restrictions the airport might impose on it. Like if the airport said it could only be used for a hangar, I'd have had to done it in a different fashion. The airport would have said it could only be used for something else, I'd have had to address it in a different fashion. Lacking any specific instructions, I just viewed it as a secondary commercial site on a minor arterial or a collector's connecting street,
okay.
College Parkway.
You referenced many times in here the definition of light industrial. When I went and looked up light industrial, from what I could understand, it didn't include museums. So would this appraisal be outside what we're proposing to use as a museum, or can that be included in?
My reference to light industrial would have related to the fact that the airport has a zoning on it. I think it's PR, which means public regional facility, something mm-hmm. in that order. The LI zone is what you encounter as you head further to the west for a while before you get in. Right across the street, you got a retail commercial. I was addressing the neighborhood zonings, and basically, I think I said in the report that I viewed LI as the effective zoning of the property. I believe, and you're catching me a little bit off guard on this issue, but I believe if you look at the LI zone, it allows most of the commercial uses that are allowed in, you know, the general commercial, retail commercial district. I didn't really worry about zoning as much as what would be a typical use on this property. What would somebody develop it to based on its character and traffic counts and what else is going on down the street?
Okay. I'm curious why we didn't use other airport properties, even other general aviation airports in our area as the comparables that you used.
Are you talking about rent comparables or land sale comparables?
Well, all the comps that you came up with for rent and for sale were actual properties within the general community rather than being associated with an airport. To me, anyway, it seems like if you're going to lease an airport property, I would like to know what our comparable properties worth on other airports or even on this airport. So I'm just curious why we didn't use airport properties as the comparables.
I didn't view that as the instructions I was given. I think more so I was asked to view this property in recognition of its location. What's been discussed here is that, you know, you've had some interest relative from Ribeiro for office industrial, retail industrial, things that I mentioned in that report. That's how I was looking at. If I would have been asked to survey other airports, I could have. I don't think that addresses the specific characteristics of this site, however. You know, if you go to the Reno airport and find out what they charge for dollar rent a car or something like that, it's extensive, but they're basing that rent based on the use and how much money that use is generating to the tenant. It ends up being kind of a whole different assignment. I don't know if that would have served a purpose for you folks.
Okay. On page 35, you use room tax collections for some of your text here. I'm wondering why you stopped in 2008.
Just probably because I was lazy. Yeah, trying to get it out quickly, whatever. This was an area description I had in place. Probably didn't even read through it.
Okay. Additionally, you know, when I made my comments last time, we talked about me having a discussion with Tim. I did promptly make an appointment with Tim to meet with him and get some of this my questions taken care of, and then I just as promptly put it in my calendar on the wrong day. So I'd like to apologize to Tim if I disrupted him in any manner. And anyway, that's all I have for now.
Anybody else with questions for Mr. Norberg? Okay, I guess now we can close that item and move to the engineer's report.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
See you all later. Well, as you know, we've got actually three active grants right now. One's the design for the main apron. That's essentially done. We're going to close it out next month. We have two open construction grants. And a third construction grant for the main apron phase three, which we're just waiting for the grant offer from the FAA. Since we have the same contractor, the plan is to finish up phase one, phase two, at the same time as the construction of phase three goes on, because that would be less disruption to the airport, and it's more conducive for Granite's operations. So that's the plan there. As I indicated last week, the FAA asked us to resubmit the grant application for the design for the North Apron. They haven't guaranteed anything, but it's a good sign that they want that. They think that they can fund it. So that's a good plan because the ACIP shows the first phase of reconstruction for the North Apron to occur next year. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, along with my report, I provided financial summaries of where we stand with each of these grants. As you can see, the main apron is essentially done. Phase one is essentially done, and phase two is approximately two-thirds complete. And then the other two are pending because we actually don't have the grant offers yet and we can't start. So any questions?
Yeah, I got, if for some reason we start to get into construction season and we still haven't got those official offers for the additional work or the issuance of the grant, are we still going to wait, or are we just going to say, get started on what you already contracted for?
You know, I'm inclined to wait because the staging area, access to the main apron from the staging area would be right through the second phase of phase two. And it's just logical to go ahead and get phase three done and then work your way backwards to the staging area.
But had there not been phase three, we still would have had to do.
Oh, we would have done it. But yeah. It just would have been awkward to work on phase three as well.
I'm just concerned that should the grants somehow be delayed, as has occurred in the past, that we not delay this to the point where we can't get the work done.
Right. I did check with the San Francisco ADO, and that grant offer, the whole application process for phase three is in Washington, D.C., and being processed by the Office of the Secretary of Transportation. How long that takes is always unknown, and usually the grant offers get delayed because we have Congress people that like to take credit for getting the money. And so they like to bundle them, and then they'll make an announcement saying, look how great I am.
So we could get hoisted on the petard of political marketing.
Yes, that could happen, but probably not. It hasn't happened in the past.
You said that we're going to minimize disruption of ramp activities. Have we considered all of what happened last summer with the hangars that got all upset because they didn't know they couldn't get in or out or whatever? Have we got a plan together as to how we're going to provide access to the people who may be impacted? Has that work been addressed yet?
Well, there's going to be disruption. Okay, but it's not going to be anything like last year. And the reason why I say that is because the only work left on phase one would be a one-day closure. I take that back. Two-day closure of that ramp to fog seal it and then stripe it again. And that's all that's left.
So that would be 2 days in a row, contiguous?
Most likely it would be delayed a little bit. We really want to make sure the fog seal cures before we do any striping, so we would probably fog seal it, come back in a couple of days, and then stripe it.
So far we've had, we're getting cooperation from El Aero Services that any aircraft that are disrupted on the east ramp can be tied down on the west ramp, which is their lease, and vice versa. Also, the disruption for Phase 2B in front of the El Aero South hangar, that's already been addressed. They are going to move those aircraft out of the hangar temporarily to tie down either on the south ramp here that's available or on the northwest ramp so that those folks will be taken care of.
Right.
There is no disruption with the Byard hangar and Weaver aircraft because Weaver's aircraft that are tied down in front of his hangar are also a part of a taxi lane, and that is an agreement between Byard and Weaver. So that would not be a factor. So everything else has been taken care of.
Airplanes in and out of his hangar, and same with Byard, but how do Byard, Weaver, and I guess now Cactus, of course, LLC that has what was the new hangar, how do they get from their hangars out to the runway?
Well, the Buin hangar is not, or the new Cactus hangar now is not a problem. What they do is they just run the aircraft straight out. The helicopters, they tow them out, and so they start up out on the ramp. As far as Weaver and Byard, that was an agreement that I was told happened some time ago when they first made their agreement. And, you know, the only other thing we had to deal with was the south hangar for El Aero.
I guess I'm asking a different question, which is, yes, Byard and Weaver have some kind of agreement that the ramp area that's part of Weaver's lease is there for the use of both Byard and Weaver.
Yeah.
But when you get to the edge of that pavement, and now we're dealing with our next phase of our reconstruction here, how do they get from that pavement out to the runway? What I'm describing, I think, is similar to what happened over here. Yeah.
How do they get out of there without saying that I got to go move my airplane over to the north ramp or something?
Is there a solution to that? I guess.
There will be. Well, if you're talking about the lip that has been left over there,
that's
going to
go.
We'll fix that.
They're going to be out there. It's going to be dug up. They're going to be. It's just like there was before.
Well, on the
where is the temporary taxiway going to be?
Oh, there's
that
a
they
taxi
can get lane. Out to the, you know, to Alpha.
There's a taxi lane that's entering the west ramp that can take them right to Alpha. That's not a problem at all. It's just the center portion. There's not going to be any hindrance, and we'll have that blockaded off.
I see what you're saying.
There is a taxi lane.
Yeah, there's plenty
in front of Weaver's place, the taxi.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to make an alley there that's where there's going to be no construction while
they're doing we're not reconstructing the pavement adjacent to Weaver's hangar because he didn't want to contribute.
Right. I think somehow I feel like
there's plenty of room.
Two different things.
No, I'm talking about how they get
from there. Right.
Somebody comes in and has their plane fixed at Weaver. It's all fixed. It's all tied down in front of Weaver's thing on the thing that's his and Byard's. How do they get out to Alpha to get to the runway with the ramp they got?
The ramp in front of
Weaver's. The ramp in front of Weaver's is reconstructed.
He pulls his airplanes out to the front of his ramp. Now how does he get to the runway?
Straight.
There's a ramp right out there.
There's straight
been
there.
Been
that's already been reconstructed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all part of 2D.
I want to have somebody coming over and say, how do I get out? How do I get through?
It's not going to be anything like last summer.
Okay.
Because, we were affecting multiple hangars.
Got that. All I'm saying at this, and what I'm corollary to this is one of the problems that happened last time is we were kind of making these plans on the fly as we went. You guys had plans, but the hangar owners didn't really know what was happening next. I think we have to do a better job of having a plan as to actually how this is going to get done, and then we have to somehow physically get it to the impacted people, and just emailing to those that we got emails for is probably not the way to do it. We got to be sure. I mean, yeah, they should give us emails, and but what if somebody that has the hangar lives in Idaho and only comes down here once in a while, and they don't have an email on file here, but they show up, and the day they show up, they're blocked. Yeah. I just want to be sure that somehow or another we've communicated exactly what's going to happen, because I don't want to spend another 4 or 5 days or 10 days like we did last summer going back and forth with tenants over the problems associated with the inability to access the runways and taxiways to get out.
Right.
Particularly since we're going to be bundling these three phases, the completion of the first two and the new phase together.
I don't see a lot of disruption, honestly. I mean, okay. They're going to come out here. I would think that they're going to do phase three first. Mm-hmm. And then when they, because phase three calls for a fog seal and stripe. Mm-hmm. So when they do that, they're going to want to do phase one, go here, then go over here, mm-hmm. finish it up, okay. Then come in and stripe it.
Okay.
It should be relatively
smooth. As long as we got it worked out so the tenants can get access to the runway without having to get a crane to pick up.
And this doesn't impact the port hangars, right? Because those guys open, they go straight out.
It'll impact the port hangars as long as phase one does, because we're going to fog seal and stripe that. But we're talking about, you know, one day to fog seal it, half a day to let it cure, and when you stripe, the striping goes pretty quick, but it could be
as long as they know which day it's going to be fog sealed. Because exactly. It's like when they did all ours over on the north side, we knew when they were going to be done. Anybody that had to get their plane out got it out of there.
Yeah. So it'll be the same.
Caught up. So same as long process. As there's clear communication this time.
Yeah, it seems like it should be easier this time because, you know, back over there we had that whole row of Comstock hangars and with all different tenants. Here, as long as Tim or Jim's people and whoever's doing it communicates with Alero and Byard and Weaver and Cactus, you've got most of it. And
exactly.
The port hangars, their interruption is going to be nothing like that interruption here.
I mean, that was a month over there. Yeah.
I didn't realize you guys had done a section over there.
It's
a straight shot out of Reaver's ramp northbound to get any aircraft movement. It's not a problem at all there.
Any other questions for Jim?
I did.
Yes.
Hey, when I went through your email and looked at all of the charts for the different phases and everything and what we spent, I didn't notice anything in the lines of change orders, or this was a little different than what we expected. So is that not within the scope of this particular report, or how do we know, like for instance, and maybe this isn't even the right report. I know that over here when you guys did that, there was a section that didn't make compaction. It had to come up several times. How do we find that sort of activity is reflected in these reports?
It's not in this report.
Okay.
Because we're not doing anything, so I didn't go into detail.
Okay.
But I typically provide a financial summary for each project, shows the bid that the contractor gave, it shows the dollar amount for change orders, shows what the engineering costs have been, shows what the airport administration costs have been, and we add it all up so that I monitor that all the time to make sure that we're not exceeding the budget. Okay, so in most cases, that's the level of detail that the airport authority is wanting.
Okay.
Just to know financially where they stood. They don't really... I think they're interested in the construction, but they trust that we're taking care of things, that we keep it under budget, and that's what I do. Now, if you want more detail as to what the individual change orders actually are going to be, things like that, I can provide that too.
But like you said, that's just not in the scope of this particular report.
But I typically provide that during construction.
Okay. Okay.
You know, in fact, next month, I would expect that you'll get a breakdown of all those costs associated with each project.
Okay.
You know, because I think that the project's going to start up in mid-June. I'm hoping at least.
Any other questions for Jim? Okay. Airport manager's report.
I have really nothing much to report this month. I would like to commend, though, on the 4th of May, we had an airport walk with the Boy Scouts. It was an Eagle Scout program for an award. And the EAA also pitched in. We had about 50 people that walked the runway and the north and south taxiways and collected three rather large bags of foreign object debris, and did a really nice job. The airport bought sodas and pizza for the Boy Scouts and EAA. EAA had a pancake breakfast, so all in all, it was a really good day. And that's really all I have. If there's any other questions on any other subject.
I'd just like to comment vis-a-vis the budget that you and I talked about earlier, that given that we're really trying to monitor this, and if there's any chance that we can get the extra grant money, then you know that means more match for us. I think a kind of as part of the airport manager's report going forward with the new budget, it'd be really good if we had, you know, the layout by month at some point for what these budget items were and where we stood vis-a-vis the budget over, under, kind of by major category at least, if not by line item. I know we talked about that earlier, and you want to fill everybody else in on what's going to happen there.
In our bookkeeping system under QuickBooks, we have the ability to plug in a budget. I've already talked to Beth about it. And since we've got this approved now, probably in another 2 weeks, we're going to get together. We're going to do some fixing of the categories in the QuickBooks to modify it a little bit, and we're going to plug in all of these budget items. So basically, we can pump out in a report form how we're doing on our budget and keep a close monitoring of it from here on out. It used to be done, apparently. But it has not been done while I've been manager, and of course I didn't know that it had been done previously. But we are doing it just starting this next fiscal year.
Any other questions for Tim?
No.
Seeing none, legal counsel's report.
I don't have anything else to report.
Good. Any questions for Steve? Treasurer's report.
All right. As of April 30th, total money market checking, maintenance, gate card fees, total checking and savings is $399,127.28. With other obligations that we have that amount to $189,973.33, we have total assets of $543,905.01. And that's our total accounts as of April 30th.
Questions for Steve? Reports from authority members. Anybody have anything to report? Public comment. Would either of you two members of the public care to comment? Seeing none, agenda items for the next regular meeting. The only thing that we know for sure we're going to carry forward the cactus item again. Anybody else have an agenda item we need to put in at this point in time? Okay.
Well, hold on there.
Yeah.
Do you want to pursue the efforts to try to bring some kind of business activity to the airport?
I think we talked about it now, and until we come up with a mechanism whereby we can actually start going out and soliciting business and business ideas from other people, and part of the problem is we can't dedicate a subcommittee to do it. We would have to agendize ourselves to take a specific action, and we don't know what that is yet. That's the only reason I haven't brought that thing back up again, is until we figure out the open meeting law, which restricts us from breaking ourselves into little subcommittees, basically precludes the ability for one or two of us to go around and start calling companies or checking other airports or something like that. So
the district attorney has opined that as long as it's strictly a fact-finding mission, mm-hmm. and no action taken, then you can do a kind of an informal type of thing. Right. So are we precluded from that?
No, I mean, you could assign people to go out and collect information, but all they would do then is collect the information and bring it back. Any discussions or any deliberations on that information would have to be in your full meeting anyway. So, I mean, our thinking, I think, in the past and what we had done before we got kind of directed not to under the open meeting laws, you get a couple people together and you get the creative juices going, you feed off of each other, you brainstorm, there's a discussion, and you accomplish something and you bring it back to the airport,
to the board full board action.
For
that's
action.
What we can't do.
And the DA has been pretty clear about that. You can't do that. If you're purely collecting data, yeah, you can. But, I mean, really, any of us can go purely collect data. Any of you can go out and collect data and just bring it back to the authority. You don't need to set up a subcommittee to do that. You know, on that same topic, I just want to share with you, I spent the last 5 days in Florida at the really the premier international conference on unmanned aircraft, and it was a real eye-opener. And every day at that conference, whether I was in the technical lectures or on the exhibit floor, I was trying to think of business opportunities for this airport. And what I see out there is I see opportunities for truly rural airports where you don't have cities around them. You know, we're an urban airport. We got lots of houses around us. I've seen opportunities for large airports from the standpoint of transporting product in and out. Our airport is kind of in the middle there, and so until we get to a stage where you have unmanned fetch robots, you each have your own little unmanned fetch UAS that goes out, instead of going down to the store to get milk, you send your little unmanned aircraft out to do it, until we get to that stage. And then at that stage, then I think we could market our airport as being a hub for those kinds of activities, whether we're doing it for Amazon or we're doing it for people's individual fetch robots. But
how about drone production?
And manufacturing. Manufacturing, they want to be next to larger facilities. Now, we would love to have them manufacture in our industrial park, and companies like ClickBond, extremely well received. I have to say, when I was down on the exhibit floor and I went to their booth, they have a lot of people talking to them. You know, their products are so successful on manned aircraft that the unmanned aircraft people, well, the big players, the Boeings, the L3s, the General Atomics, they already know about ClickBond. So when they start making their, you know, their unmanned stuff, they're coming back to ClickBond already. So there's a certain amount of manufacturing synergy there, but each of those companies, their facilities are someplace else. It'd be great to lure them here.
Maybe ClickBond just gets so big that they need the center triangle.
You know, I'll tell you, they are really successful. And, you know, it's funny, there was a knockoff company there. It turns out it was somebody, it was a group of people, one of whom was a former ClickBond employee. And you could tell their products don't work. They don't work like ClickBond. ClickBond has this track record of you use their fasteners, they stay together. And that's why each F-35 has like, I don't know, 20,000 of their fasteners in it, that kind of thing. But there's real future in the unmanned aircraft, but it's really hard to predict. And one of the biggest problems right now is the other countries are leaving us behind. There was a guy from Australia that got up when the head guy from the FAA on unmanned systems, Jim Williams, was there. This guy from Australia got up on the question-and-answer portion. He says, you know, we've been doing it in Australia since 2002. We figured out how to integrate our unmanned with our manned aircraft. We don't understand why it's taking you guys so long.
It's federal bureaucracy.
Well, it's that, and then if you talk to the FAA, they say our airspace is more complicated than anybody else's. I don't know if that's necessarily true.
But why is it going to take until 2020 to come up with this is what my question
well,
is.
Yeah, and then that's the other dilemma, because the 2012 Reauthorization Act that refunds the FAA requires the FAA to get their butts moving on unmanned aircraft, and it requires them to adopt regulations by August of this year for the under 55-pound stuff, which could be the stuff that Amazon uses to do stuff. But the FAA said, guess what, we're not going to have them ready. And the reason they're not going to have them ready is they'll have something proposed by August, but the federal rulemaking process is an 18-month process. So we're probably still 2 years away from having regs. And that's just on the under 55-pound stuff. You know, all the really juicy stuff, you know, the bigger stuff where we can use it to fertilize fields and do, you know, the heavy lifting, that's even further away. And sadly, Japan's doing it right now, Germany's doing it right now, and right now, you know, we're trying to promote Nevada as one of the six FAA test areas. We were selected as one of the six test areas, which is should be great for us. But the companies that I talked to and a lot of other people I talked to said, if you need tests, you don't go to the U.S., you go to Canada or you go to Australia.
That's exactly why we're using it.
Yeah, and it's really tragic because, you know, the idea was that if we can get them here to test, we might be able to lure them here to stay. In fact, Mike Kazmierski, the EDON guy, says 60 to 80% of the time that we get somebody to visit, we get them to do something here, either open a branch here, move a business here, buy product here. We get economic benefit out of it. And so we were hoping if we can get them here to test and get them to like Nevada, then we can get them here to stay.
Yeah, but because of the FAA procedures, we can't even invite them because we don't know what to tell them. Like the private pilot, instrument pilot,
yeah,
commercial pilot ratings required to fly these larger than 55-pound drones.
Right. Those regs are not out. That will take a while. But, I mean, what we are doing, just so you know that we aren't sitting on our hands, we are working hard to lure some of the large manufacturers to do some of their civilian commercial type testing here in Nevada. And to do that, you need something from the FAA called a certificate of authority. And the FAA has indicated they're going to give preference to the six states that were selected as test sites. So maybe we can actually get a certificate of authority in 60 days, which I read meant 60 days, and then I talked to the FAA people, and they said, oh, that's 60 business days. So it's like, you know, sometimes you feel like you can't win, but they said they're going to push hard here.
It's about 3 months.
Yeah, it's about 3 months. And, you know, for some of us who have planned projects for where we wanted to actually fly them in July, it's like, okay, we're screwed now. We're talking August, September.
Maybe we all go up to Seattle for a fish dinner and go visit Jeff Bezos and ask him if he wants to come down here and fly things from his Fernley place over here at Carson City.
Yeah, but the problem is, yeah, and if we could help him get a COA to do that. In fact, the structure is this. The Governor's Office of Economic Development created a nonprofit entity called the Nevada Institute of Autonomous Services. And then they went out and hired a company called Bowhead, which is an Alaskan company, to manage that and to make that nonprofit work. And the nonprofit's whole role is to lure businesses here. The Bowhead people are really sharp. And there's a new guy in Bowhead that just started about a month ago. His name is Warren Rapp, R-A-P.
Warren Rapp's
dead? Yeah, his office is at Stead right now. And he is a sharp guy, and he's a doer. You know, I've listened to a lot of these guys talk, and they talk a good line. But when you deal with this guy, he gets things done. And so I'm optimistic. I think we can get some stuff up here. My concern is I don't see Carson City Airport as a test area. We're surrounded by houses.
We can do all the peripheral stuff that's needed to support them.
We could do support stuff, but what they're going to probably want to do is they're probably going to want to be in like a Fallon Municipal, Hawthorne, Silver Springs, Tonopah, maybe even Minden. They're probably going to want to test there, and they're probably going to want to have their support services there. And keep in mind, these are the smaller guys. The bigger guys that need chase services, you know, where you have to have chase aircraft to meet your safety standards, those guys could be anywhere. But they're probably going to want to fly in the non-inhabited areas too, because when you get the certificate of authority, you apply for a block of airspace that you can use for a specified period of time. And chances are they're going to want a block of airspace that doesn't have any houses underneath it, doesn't have any structures, because, let's face it, they're testing stuff. They expect it to break. They expect some of this stuff to crash. And so, you know, you want to be in a situation where it's not going to crash on top of somebody's head. But
maybe we should just go buy Goldfield.
Yeah. I don't
know. You mentioned 55 pounds and above. Are they basically going to leave 55 pounds and under alone?
No. Those are the regs. 55 pounds and under are the regs that are due in August.
Oh.
And 55 pounds and under is still some pretty decent stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that, you know, quad and octocopters that can pick things up and deliver them. You know, the little images you see on the internet of what Jeff Bezos has with his little white swish, or the brown octocopter with a swish on it, that's an under 55 pound design. So, I mean, there could be a whole lot of commerce and stuff on the under 55.
Does that include this kind of stuff, these RC planes?
Well, we spent a good amount of time in legal clinics there at the conference. I was surprised how many lawyers there, because there were probably 35 lawyers. There were probably, I don't know, 30,000 people there. And of that, there were probably 35 lawyers. And it is designed as a technical seminar, not a lawyer seminar. But we got into these legal sessions, and the problem is the way the FAA can't really see a distinction between the radio-controlled stuff, like a lot of this stuff, which is actually pretty big, but even the little stuff, and unmanned aircraft. It's too blurred for them, and so they're trying to capture them all together. And, of course, that leads to absurdity, which means that you go to Radio Shack at Christmas to buy your kids, or maybe not your kids yourself, or your spouse or someone, one of those little helicopters with the two little props on it that you can fly, which lasts usually a couple of days until you fly into the wall too many times. But you go to buy one of those, and the way the FAA is defining unmanned aircraft, those fit in. Now, they made an attempt to eliminate kites in talking about tethered. But all that did is create a whole bunch of people out there saying, oh, great, if I do my UAV and I tether it somehow, I can get around all the regs. Well, no. And frankly, an unmanned aircraft that's flying around that has a tether connected to the ground is probably a bigger hazard to run into than the thing flying around by itself.
But what about the rocket guys at the Black Rock Desert? Down.
The rocket guys, the guy who do the land speed stuff?
No.
The guys, it's a totally separate entity. They have to apply for a permit.
Yeah, I mean,
airspace lockdown.
Yeah, they have to get a TF. They have to a temporary flight restriction authorized for the area or in a
note. So they're already covered by.
Well, they have to go through a similar process, but that is such short duration.
50, so well, kind of got that. The FAA has finally figured that out after 70 years.
Yeah, but they do it, and you know, there's a parallel thing that's going on in space. I mean, if you read the stuff about Elon Musk and his SpaceX stuff, he was wrestling some of the same battles with
use of space, airspace in space. Because, you know, they want, you know, so it's the damnedest thing. You've got a government who really wants private enterprise to come up with these solutions, which I think is a really noble goal. But then they won't get out of their way to let them develop the products that could replace the space shuttle and all these other government-funded projects. But, I don't want to belabor this, but I just want to tell you, I think there's opportunities out there. I'm having trouble seeing them for our airport. I see them for the rural guys, see them for some of the urban guys. I see a place for it in other events, and then I also talk to a lot of people that I can't discuss. But there are some opportunities in Nevada, some things where they cross the line between military and civilian testing. I got nothing else.
So, did you want something on the agenda with all that, or?
Well, I'll just tell you what I had in mind, and you can tell me whether it should even be on the damn agenda. It started out with Bob Dickinson getting in my face over at this hamburger thing, like he always does, and telling me that we ought to take all that water, that surplus water, that the sewer stuff that was destined for the golf course and have it trucked out or have it piped out here. He didn't have any good reason for it. And then I went and talked to the water department anyway. They said they do not have extra water. They're still short.
Okay, and Jim probably knows a lot more about this, but we currently have a treated effluent line that runs under the road right in front of the airport. We gave that easement to the city.
We have an effluent line already out
there.
Yeah, it's parked right over there where they get their water trucks filled.
And I think that fire department actually taps into it. But the problem with the golf courses and the extra effluent is in wet years, there's treated effluent to get rid of. In dry years, there isn't enough to go around, and the golf courses are going to be fighting each other for who gets the water. And so it's not a question of – I originally thought the same thing because I listened to one of the discussions at the Board of Supervisors, and I thought, oh, they got to get rid of water. We'll find a way to get rid of it down at the east end of our airport. You know, we'll plant grass. We'll plant something that will consume the water. You know, we don't want standing water because we don't want birds, but we can plant things. And that's when I started asking the questions, and I found out it's a much more complex problem. Yeah. If you always had too much water, yeah, that might be a solution, but it's the other way around.
You got plenty, but here, no.
Yeah.
Well, it would have been nice if we could have had them pay us for the opportunity to get rid of their water. But the question is, what if the water comes here, you know, what do we do with it? And you just mentioned planting grass. Well, medical marijuana is going to be legal, I think, in Nevada in about 2 more years. And it seems to me that this airport would be a nice place to grow it.
Because we build another fence.
Well, we already have a level of security around it.
We need a much better.
And we do have it somewhere down the line to have the FAA give us another $410,000 to improve the security. So, and that might happen in 2 more years. So we would have one level of security already.
And we need a 20-foot fence with concertina wire on top of it.
Yeah, I know.
That would be the first level. But the best way to grow it would be indoors. It's not best to grow it outside.
I think it's mandated for indoor growth.
Geez, Phil, you know a lot about this.
I went and talked to a guy at the water department about this, and I needed the meaning to go back to ask him if he would grow hydroponic tomato, if he would eat hydroponic tomatoes that had been watered with effluent.
Treated effluent, yeah.
So I still have to find out whether that would be acceptable. And I don't know what pot that was had been irrigated with effluent would be like either. I mean, it would be some extra minerals.
I don't know. Medical marijuana is a small step. I mean, if we ever went the step that Colorado went with, which is recreational use, any adult can walk in and buy marijuana and smoke it, then you might have those kinds of amounts of marijuana. But in the states where it's only medical marijuana, I think it's all grown indoor, it's all well protected.
it's all licensed by the state.
Yeah.
It's through the state that grants the license. It's not local.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it costs $5,000 for the license. There's some big hitters down in the Las Vegas area that have been signing up for a license.
$5,000 to put in the application.
Right.
Well, yeah. 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 Once you get the license, there's a very big fee attached to
it's
whatever you
produce. $30,000 to get the license after that.
Yeah, assuming you get selected because it's a competitive selection thing.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the airport authority
or
something.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Business.
But if you could grow a cash crop with excess water, yeah, why not? Don't just grow grass, grow something you can sell.
Well, I was just thinking at least the land of the people who wanted to grow this stuff.
And they've already got their land sewn up and where they're going to license it, where they're putting it, all that's a done deal.
So that all comes into the application then?
Right, you got to have that now.
Does that mean we're too late to get these guys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. Affluent water you're never going to get because it's too
unpredictable. It's kind of like wind power, you know. Great, how do you know you can turn the lights on? It all depends on whether the wind's blowing, you know.
You may get it this year, but you may not get it next year.
Well, and the thing with the effluent, it has to be in conjunction with growing the crop. You can't just put it on the ground and let it soak in. It has to be a crop. So like the prison farm grows alfalfa. The golf courses grow grass. They can't cut that grass and leave it lay. They have to pick it up and dispose of it.
It's quite a minute.
There's only a way we can market sagebrush.
Yeah.
Tumbleweeds.
If we grow our sagebrush and allow native seed collection to restore burn areas, we probably have a crop.
Okay. There'll be rules and regulations over that.
We're getting kind of away from the context of the airport board here.
Yes, sir.
So Phil wants an item on the agenda.
Thinking around here. Is that what you're saying? You want an item on the agenda for growing medical marijuana?
We might get some more public interest in
our well, I'm keeping the audience going, wow, man.
Well, perhaps this shouldn't be on dinner. Maybe this is going to be one of those secret...
This is one of those things we sit around and have a beer some night and talk about it.
This would be one of those brainstorm violation things. No.
Anyway, anything further on agenda items?
No.
We stand in need of a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
I second.
Moved and seconded. We adjourned. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
Yes, sir.
I'm after you for drones, Stephen.
Yes.
Oh, hey, Morris?
Yes.
Hold on a second, please.